Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up today, an exclusive interview with U.S. Ambassador to the Holy See, Francis Rooney, as he prepares to return home upon the conclusion of his posting to the Vatican. And in our continuing coverage of the Holy Land Coordination Committee's visit to the Middle East, we go to Jerusalem as European and North American bishops wrap up their annual visit of solidarity with the Holy Land's Christians. We'll be hearing from the president of the Bishops' Conference, Cardinal Francis George. U.S. Ambassador Francis Rooney is preparing to head back home after more than 2 years as his country's diplomatic representative to the Holy See. Charles Collins sat down for a talk with him to find out what memories he'll be taking home with him.
For a guy from Muskogee, Oklahoma, a state with 4% Catholics, growing up knowing very few members of the Catholic hierarchy, and very little about how the central hierarchy of the church worked, it has been an incredible experience to see how important the role of the Secretary of State of the Vatican, the important opportunities that the Holy Father and the Office of the Secretary of State have to make the world a better place, to push the fundamental values of religious freedom, human dignity, seek peace, to seek transparency, to seek democracy from a platform of no secular, or personal, or pecuniary agenda. They have a tremendous opportunity to help the world, and they're assiduous in the way they go about doing it, and it's just an honor to have been part of this process for a couple of years.
Upon your arrival, you arrived just after the 20th anniversary of the establishment of relations, if I remember correctly. 20 years ago, there was some controversy when the United States established relations with the Holy See. Where would you say the state of that relationship is now?
Well, I think the relations with the Holy See are very strong, and particularly under the presidency of George W. Bush, who has such strong Christian and family values that have been a part of the hallmark of the last 7 years, I think the relationship is stronger than ever, both from a policy point of view and from a personal point of view. Policy point of view, of course, the alignment of our interest with the Holy See is very strong. Our national security strategy mentions in its early paragraphs human dignity and the essential freedoms, the same things that the Holy See is seeking to propagate in the world. On a personal level, of course, everybody knows the President had a very warm meeting with the Holy Father. Mrs. Bush had a great meeting with the Holy Father in February 2006, and I think there's a great personal chemistry. There was controversy when the mission was established, and I think now certainly the Congress and the executive branch and the State Department would see the tremendous value in working closely with the Holy See and leveraging our efforts with the Holy See's efforts in the areas of the large issues facing humanity, preserving human dignity, enhancing religious freedom, and the other freedoms, association, speech, etc., where, since we're the country that was founded as one nation under God, we're a natural ally with the Holy See.
You mentioned the President's meeting with the Pope. Also, you are the first ambassador with the present pontiff, and it was a very long pontificate before. You mentioned being a Catholic from Oklahoma, but you're also a Catholic, spent a good deal of your life under Pope John Paul II. What has your experience been having this new Pope? Was there any interesting things that came out about being the first ambassador with this new Pope?
Well, there was a great deal of interest on the part of the State Department and the government, as well as many of our visitors who've come over here, about what's the Pope like. You know, he had a certain reputation in the press in the United States as being very severe in his approach towards some Catholic doctrines and things like that. And what I found when I met him is such an incredibly warm, engaging person as well. As I mean, you look at his eyes, you see he's the Pope. It's just you kind of melt. But there's a great warmth there, which accompanies his intellectual depth. And so it's a rare combination. And I think that has shown itself to be very important to the world in light of the kinds of specific issues the world's facing right now. His particular combination of warmth and depth
Now, in your time here, has there been any particular moment, you mentioned, of course, the president's visit, but maybe on a more low-key level that stands out to you in your time here at the Holy See?
Oh, there have been so many things, Charlie, I hate to pick. I mean, obviously, meeting the Holy Father is the penultimate experience for any, I think, Catholic, certainly for Catholic, and really for any thinking Christian or human. But there have been many important things. I mean, working with Sister Eugenie on the trafficking program and the people here in our mission, and I think we've continued to advance the ball there. It's very satisfying and I think an important work of both the United States and the Holy See. So many of the wonderful people that we've met in the Secretary of State's office and the different dicasteries, could hardly start to mention one without omitting many other wonderful people.
Well, you talk about the trafficking. For many years, this embassy has been involved with the anti-trafficking movement here in Italy, in the church. Can you tell us some of your experiences involving that?
A couple of highlights right quick are the recent conference we did, which was enlarged by some extra funding we got from the State Department, which related to the president's visit. When the president was here, my wife Kathleen and Amy Roth in our office organized a breakfast with Mrs. Bush over at Villa Taverna, a very small breakfast, and with Sister Eugenia. And Sister Eugenia got to spend a good time with Mrs. Bush and actually got to see the president. And the result of that is an increased focus of the State Department and increased funding. And I think we've been able to take the program to a whole new level, having those personal relationships in place.
You did see the Holy Father again during the annual speech to the Diplomatic Corps. He focused much of his speech on the situation in the Middle East. And can you tell us some of the workings there with the peace process, and how you think the Holy See and the United States can work together on this issue?
Well, and I think that ties into your question about U.S.-Holy See relations. I mean, the United States wanted the Holy See at the Lebanon meeting a few years ago and they in Cyprus, and they wanted the Holy See at Annapolis, and Monsignor Parolin went to Annapolis. And I think they're an important part of the quest for solution and for the broadening of dialogue concerning the Israeli-Palestinian conundrum. You know, the Holy Father spoke, I think, supporting the Annapolis process of broad inclusion of a nonpartisan and a broad, if you will, approach to the solution. And that's exactly what Annapolis is about, and that's exactly why the president's bopping around to see Palestinian guys, to see Olmert and the Israeli government, and he's going to do everything he can do to try to advance the ball here in the home stretch of his presidency.
The Holy See has been in negotiations with Israel for several years on various economic issues, all stemming from the establishment of diplomatic relations with Israel a little over 10 years ago. You have mentioned that the United States has been trying to help these negotiations along. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, the United States has had a consistent interest in seeing the process that began, I believe it was 94, with the recognition of Israel come to the kind of conclusion that everyone expected would happen shortly thereafter, which would be the concluding of a treaty which settled all these ancillary issues about church property and who does what in Israel. And it's taken a long time, as you know, and it's been a complicated, tortuous negotiation. And since I've been here several times, people from the State Department, including the Secretary, have contacted the government of Israel and urged them to stay at the table, to negotiate, and to try to get some of these kind of technical issues resolved so that we could focus on the big picture, which is the promotion of human dignity, solving the Palestinian-Israeli conflict in a way that gives a legitimate Palestinian state, but also preserves the self-confidence and the security of Israel. So these are kind of distracted from achieving the main objective, you know?
Now, moving back to you personally, what happens to Francis Rooney now that he leaves the city of Rome?
Well, I'll go back to my businesses, and they've operated on autopilot the last few years, and more time with our family, which is really the only problematic issue about serving over here is to be so far away from our kids in the United States. We've gone back and forth quite a bit, and they've come here, but it'll be nice to be around Notre Dame University a little more next year. And I think that God has given me a great gift of the chance to serve here, and I'm thankful for the president immensely for giving me the chance to serve here. And I think I need to take that gift forward and speak and explain to groups that are interested about how it really works here and how important the relationship between the United States and the Holy See is, what the Curia really does, you know, the role that the Secretary of State plays in dealing with some of these kind of secular conflicts and issues around the world, and the opportunities that we have to make the world a better place by linking our interest and the interest of the Holy See and the kind of agendaless good motive from which the Holy Father speaks.
Outgoing U.S. Ambassador to the Holy See, Francis Rooney there, speaking to my colleague Charles Collins. Well, Ambassador Rooney is not the only one preparing to make a trip back home. Many European bishops head back to Europe Tuesday after a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. Bishops from across Europe and North America taking part in the Holy Land coordination meeting have been traveling through Israel and the West Bank to express solidarity with the small local Christian community there.
Ed è molto importante, prima di tutto perché manifesta, fa vedere l'interesse della Chiesa, in questo caso della Chiesa dell'Europa, dell'America del Nord.
The Apostolic Nuncio in the Holy Land, Archbishop Antonio Franco, says the annual meeting is important because it gives the bishops an opportunity to assess the difficulties faced by local Christians and the needs of the local church. It also helps them determine concrete ways to help. Well, on Tuesday, the bishops had talks with Israel's interior minister before heading to Rome for meetings with top Vatican officials, including Secretary of State Tarcisio Bertone, on Wednesday. Philippa Hitchin has been traveling with the bishops. She sent this report.
Aside from the political encounters designed to raise the concerns of the Christian communities here with both Israeli and Palestinian leaders, one of the central moments of these annual visits is the celebration of Mass in the local parishes, enabling cardinals and bishops from Western countries to share briefly in the daily lives of these people. On Sunday, the Feast of Our Lord's Baptism, I spent the day in Bethlehem, from where you can look out across the hills, down towards the Jordan River Valley, where Jesus was baptized by John. In the Gospel accounts describing that moment, we have a perfect image of the Trinity, with Jesus in the waters of the Jordan, the voice of God the Father coming from the clouds, and the dove, symbol of the Spirit of Peace, appearing between the two. As I reflected on this mystery of the three in one, we travelled back across the separation barrier into the city where three faiths are struggling to coexist in this one place, a city which has known so many wars since the Prince of Peace was born in Bethlehem and died on the cross here in Jerusalem. At the start of this five-day meeting, the Latin patriarch Michel Sabah talked about the mystery of these holy places, Nazareth and Bethlehem, where the incarnation took place, or Jerusalem, where each Friday the Franciscans still walk the way of the cross and relive the mystery of the crucifixion and resurrection. The patriarch speaks of a vocation of all Christians in this land today to witness to these mysteries and to speak the message of peace and reconciliation, which is at the heart of our faith. Christian leaders and people of all faith, he believes, must be prepared to stay in this city, to live and work, and if necessary, to die in order to bring peace to this land, which has seen so much political and religious conflict over the centuries. In their own ways, the Catholic bishops who've spent a few days here will be taking this mystery of faith back to their own countries, their own parishes and dioceses, urging people to support all efforts at peace and reconciliation in this region. Patriarch Sabah is calling for a worldwide day of prayer for peace in the Holy Land to support his people and let them know their problems are not forgotten elsewhere in the world. Secondly, all the church leaders here agree that pilgrimages are an essential way of bringing much-needed financial support to the struggling communities, who are finding it increasingly hard to overcome the obstacles and make a decent living here. And thirdly, the visiting Catholic bishops will be returning home, determined to put pressure on their own governments to support effective negotiations between Palestinians and Israelis, so often thwarted, yet so essential for the peace and security of all in this part of the world. In Jerusalem, I'm Philippa Hitchin.
Well, among the bishops taking part in the fact-finding pilgrimage to the Holy Land, a number of presidents of national bishops' conferences. Philippa spoke to Cardinal Francis George of Chicago, recently elected president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. This was the first time Cardinal George has participated in the Holy Land coordination meetings. She asked him what has struck him most.
It's a group of very concerned people who have followed the situation here and who have come to be pastorally present to the Catholics of the Holy Land.
What about, as you've been going around talking to people, what perhaps has struck you most?
Well, the differences of opinion about what is going on and shared concern for the future. So it depends whether you're speaking to a Palestinian Christian or a Palestinian Muslim or an Israeli Jew or an Israeli Christian. You get slightly different perspectives on the situation because they're living different realities. But all of them are concerned about having peace in their society. No one wants to see their children go off to war. However, the way to find peace remains difficult to discover.
As you said, it's largely a question here of perception, isn't it? It's difficult to get away from the perception that you're either pro-Israeli or pro-Palestinian. And one of the problems, perhaps, with the United States is so often seen as an ally, if you like, of Israel in the fight against terror, pro-Israeli, and therefore finding it very difficult to end the occupation, which Palestinians would see as the first prerequisite for bringing peace to this country.
The perception of the United States is not entirely false, but it is more complicated than that. If you take a look at the statements of the U.S. government over the decades, they've always been in favor of a state for the Palestinian people. However, they're also quite concerned that there are people in Palestine and elsewhere who would deny the existence of the State of Israel, and that is non-negotiable for the United States as it is for the Israelis. So the question then is, how can two peoples who are living cheek by jowl share this land in peace in two different states? That's been the American goal. The problem is compounded when the Palestinians have such an extreme difficulty in governing the territories that they have, a difficulty that they would say is caused by the Israeli occupation. But it's very complex on the ground. Nonetheless, in a general way, I suppose that is certainly part of the truth.
Do you see the goal of achieving this two-state solution any closer since President Bush's recent visit here to the region?
Well, officially, everyone has responded with the statement that they're going to try. Unofficially, I think there's a lot of skepticism, but anything that brings some kind of hope is something we should all pursue and pray for.
As you say, on the ground, though, there is a lot of skepticism, isn't there? What else, perhaps, can the United States do, government and people, to try and prove that it is really serious in this effort?
Well, I think we have to stay with it, but you have to have somebody to stay with. If there's to be peace here, it has to be peace among the people who are here. And while the United States certainly has a lot of influence in many ways, it doesn't govern Israel or Palestine. And so it is up to the people here. Whoever, as President Bush said, he's tried to give a mighty nudge, and I hope he's successful, and we should all pray that he is, because the alternative is that we run out of time for a two-state solution, and then the result will be more violence and perhaps chaos.
There are those here who have talked about the last-ditch attempt, a really critical moment. Do you share that view, that we are on the brink of a no-return situation if peace is not brought about, say, within the next year?
Well, that's the opinion of very respected diplomats, including some from the United Kingdom who have spoken with us, and so I presume that is true. It's also true that the longer the fence remains up, the more the division of the people and the acrimony and the contention will continue. The fence will come down, Israel has promised, when there is peace and their security demands are met. If there is no peace, then the fence remains up, and the fence divides people who, till a few years ago, used to live more closely together. Once you separate people and no relationships on a personal level are possible, there cannot be peace on a broader level either.
That's certainly one of the most important concerns, isn't it? This lack of contact, particularly between young people who are the future of these two states. What can you do? What can people in other countries do, perhaps, to support these efforts to overcome these rigid divisions?
I think some countries and private organizations have created places where Israeli youth and Palestinian youth come together outside of this country. I'm reminded a few years ago there was this program that we had in Chicago to bring Irish lads and lassies from the north of Ireland together with people from the Republic, and at a very young age, and it worked. It helped a lot. And so we should now, perhaps, unfortunately, but necessarily, have to try to do the same thing with the Palestinian and Israeli youth. It's important that they stay together. Now, because they can't meet physically, they stay together through computers. It's very interesting. Young people are connected electronically, and so the connections are there. But it's not nearly as effective as it would be if they could walk across the street and talk to one another.
What do the people in your diocese, the people in Chicago, think about the situation here? A lot of times we hear there's a lot of ignorance about what is going on, and these, again, back to the perceptions that Palestinian perhaps equals terrorist.
Oh, I don't think too many people believe that a Palestinian, by reason of being Palestinian, is a terrorist, but that there are terrorists among the Palestinians is also clear. The Hamas, in its official declarations at least, is for the violent overthrow of the Israeli state. Depending on whom you speak with, there's a greater or lesser understanding, perception of what is going on here. I wouldn't dare to say what's going on here after a few days' visit. So certainly someone who has never been here and hasn't had access to the people I've had is all the more disadvantaged in finding out the details. But there is a concern and a will on the part of everyone that there be peace in the Holy Land. And we pray for that. And I'm sure Catholics throughout the world pray for that, as they do here. People have been praying for the peace of Jerusalem for 5,000 years. And yet the history is marked by warfare and violence and bloodshed. But God's ways are mysterious but certain, and we have to continue to pray. And around that, everyone that I know of in the United States is united.
What do you think are the most important ways of supporting? You mentioned prayer, of course. What else can people do outside to help support these efforts for peace here?
I think that the collections that we take up for the churches of the Holy Land are well supported, and that's important. That the living stones of the people here feel united and supported, and that we're still able to keep up as well the sacred places that were built long ago and need a lot of support. The support of the Holy See in its negotiations on the fundamental agreement with the Israeli government, and particularly now the issues around visas so that the clergy can be assured for the future. These are all ways that quietly, because no one likes to be publicly reprimanded, we can work to bring pressures so that both sides come together. The plight of Christians in the Muslim-occupied territories is one that's often ignored in the press at home. It's as if all Palestinians were Muslims and all Israelis were Jews. But there are Christians who are Israelis and there are Christians who are Arabs and Palestinians. And that's a dimension that we should, I think, as Catholics, bring forward far more often than we do.
Cardinal Francis George of Chicago, Illinois. He's also president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. The European and North American bishops will be conferring with their Arab colleagues here in Rome in the coming days. In fact, the Conference of Latin Bishops of Arab Regions is holding its ad limina visit here in the Vatican. They'll be participating with the Holy Land Coordination Committee in meetings with top Vatican officials Wednesday, after which a press conference will be held here at Vatican Radio in the afternoon. Well, to find the very latest on that and other news on the Holy Land, do check out our website. That's vaticanradio.org. Well, in the meantime, Emer McCarthy tells us more about the ad limina visit of bishops from Arab regions and some of the concerns they're sharing with the church hierarchy here.
Known by the acronym CERLA, the Group of 12 covers 21 nations over a geographical region that stretches from Cyprus to Syria and includes Iraq, Israel, Somalia, and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. On Monday, Pope Benedict XVI received a first delegation in private audience here at the Vatican, among them Bishop Paul Hinder, apostolic vicar to the Gulf nations, including the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
I think the visit of the King Abdullah to the Pope was a very, very strong sign. Also for the country itself, to show the people even the picture of the Pope and with the cross. These are signs which show at least the will, the intention of a certain opening. Now, of course, we, especially Europeans, we have the tendency to expect fruits immediately. I don't think that's the right way to approach the Arabian world, and especially not the case of Saudi Arabia, where we have to do with a very complex situation where it takes time, patience. What is needed is delicacy also in our way to approach this situation. But I hope that we can go slow steps with the hope that it will be sustainable. And more important for me than a big show that tomorrow we can build a huge church in Riyadh, of course I would be happy if we could do that. But I am not expecting it. And I would even say it to the king. The first step has to be for me that we get the security of our people, that they can gather even in more modest buildings and to exercise their faith freely. Express them freely, live their faith in security, that they don't need to hide, that they are recognized as human beings also in how they have the relationship with their God, and that means in my case with the God of Jesus Christ. The whole question of the terrorism, it's not, first of all, a question of religion. It's a question of fanatism, which has, of course, a religious touch. They may claim religion for it, but I think basically it's another problem. However, I think also from the Muslim side, those who are entering in the dialogue, they have to be more courageous to speak clearly out that everything which is in connotation with this horrible terroristic act of certain. We find it out also outside of the Muslim world, of course, but that they have to speak clearly out, this is against God, not only against human beings. And it's not a mean which can be, or there are no means which can be justified in any way by the religion. I hope they will be able to tell them worse that. Of course, It would be sad if one day they would have to say we can't condemn it because it's even found in the Quran. It would be sad. I hope they will be able to tell us honestly and without any buts and ifs, no, this is no way and not justified by our religion. That would help. And also in building up more confidence between us. And there are, I know Muslims which are thinking like that, but maybe they had not sufficient voice until now even among themselves.
Swiss-born Bishop Paul Hinder is based in Abu Dhabi as Apostolic Vicar of Gulf Nations, including the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. That concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.